And on this Saturday morning, the 4th of May, I am joined by Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Denny.
Oh, my. Things are really greening up. Oh,
they certainly are. This rain is amazing.
It really is. And I know, according to the forecast, it should be clearing up here in 3-4 hours or so is kind of what it looks like. But things, much needed rain, and I'm glad to see it. And we're glad you're back here on the radio, Teresa. Let's invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question to ask Teresa, by all means, call it in or text it in, 651-461-9226. And while we're waiting for our listeners to join us, what's on your mind this morning, Teresa?
Well, I just wanted to share with everyone that we are having plant sales. It's the plant sale time of the year.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, there is one out at the Arboretum next the 10th, whichever that day is, Saturday or Sunday. So check the Arboretum because they have a fantastic plant sale. But lots of the master gardeners will be having plant sales too. So check with your local master gardener group. I know in Hennepin County and Ramsey County, we have our plant sales on the 18th, which is the following Saturday. So we hope you can all come and get plants. I don't know about Ramsey County that much, but Hennepin County will have over 22,000 plants. Many of them grown by master gardeners, none of them pulled from our soil, so you don't have to worry about jumping worms. We've either purchased them or grown them on ourselves. We'll have perennials and annuals and flowers and vegetables and herbs and native plants, and we'll have lots of master gardeners there to answer your question, and we'll have an info booth too if you have questions. So bring your questions. Our sale is from 9 to 2, but we're usually done by about 11 or 12. We do run out of plants, so come and join us.
This is the 18th?
It's the 18th, Saturday
the 18th. Saturday the 18th, and where?
Ours is at the Hopkins Pavilion in Hopkins.
Okay.
And the Ramsey one is at a Aldrich Ice Center, I think it is, but double check with them.
Sure. Well, all right. That's great info. Yeah, this is that time of year. And, boy, I'm looking at the texts that are zooming in here as we speak.
Oh, good.
651-461-9226. This came in earlier, actually. They wanted to ask you briefly to talk about calla lily bulbs. I've never had them before. Love the show. Well, thank you for that. How about the calla lily?
Sure. So these are bulbs. They're bulbs, and they're annuals for us. They're a very tender annual. You plant them up. You can get them planted now. They like to grow in the shade, and they're just absolutely beautiful. They're those very structural, single lilies that are just absolutely gorgeous. And then you do have to pull them up and store them over winter, and the Extension website will have some information about how to store them. But they're absolutely beautiful flowers.
Okay. Phone calls as well coming in. Let's grab one. Mary Lou, calling in from Crystal this morning. Hi, Mary Lou. What is your question for Master Gardener Teresa Rooney? Hello, Mary Lou.
Yeah, hi. Sorry. We have a new phone and I kind of messed up.
Okay.
I understand.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, I have a question about Pachycendra and wild ginger.
Mm-hmm.
I have both. I love them both. But is it true that neither one of them like to be touched or messed with? I try to clean it up, and when I did with my Pachycendra, it just kind of isn't growing now. It's like I, you know, injured it in a way.
You might have damaged some growth that was just coming up that was very tender. I've never noticed. I haven't grown Pachycendra. I do grow the wild ginger, and I haven't noticed that it's particularly not susceptible to being damaged. They do have bigger, fleshier stems, so you can break them, but they'll come back up again. You should be just fine. So next year, you may want to just either clean it out a little bit earlier, or if it's not too bad, just leave it and let the Pachycendra come up around whatever is on top of it. It usually outcompetes any weeds and can come up above the leaves, and then the leaves just break down and add nutrition to the soil. So it should be okay, Mary Lou.
All right, very good. Let's move to Mound, Minnesota. Kathy calling in from Mound. Hi, Kathy. What is your question?
Well, good morning, Denny. Thank you, and good morning, Teresa. My question, Teresa, is it too late to prune a grapevine?
Kathy, I believe it is, but I want to send you to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. You could do some pruning on it. I don't know that you would want to cut it all the way back like you would have earlier in the season. I'm going to defer to the Extension website because my grapevines just get a little crazy and I don't prune them like I should, so I'm not totally up to date on when is the best pruning. I know early spring is better. So I'm going to refer you, Kathy, over to the Extension website. Sorry about that.
Yep, extension.umn.edu. Great, yep. Great resource. This listener, Teresa, says we've been gifted 1 foot tall spruce and pine trees. Could we leave them potted for a couple of years or put them in their forever home? If left potted, how do we care for them?
It would be better if they could get into their forever home if you can get the water out to them, because you're going to have to water them to make sure they're very established for the first few years. If you're going to keep them in pots, you would need to take those pots just before, say, into September and October, sink the pots into the ground, give them a good drink of water, and then do a little bit of covering with some straw or some leaves to give it a little bit of protection, and then pull them back up in the spring. You could do that in case you're thinking, I want to put them in a different place in a few years, and that we're taking time to get to that. We have to build the garage or whatever the situation is. So either way, but you're going to have to sink them into the ground in the wintertime. They need to be outside.
Teresa was looking in regards to this next text about our low overnight temp tonight, which is predicted to be about 43. But the listener says they have hanging baskets of dragonwing begonias, petunias, geraniums. The temp, as I said, is supposed to fall to the low 40s tonight. Will these flowers be safe outside, or do they need to be protected?
You know, they'd probably be safe, but I would bring them in at least. Into the garage, or at least toss something over them. Maybe take them off of the hangers where they are, and set them close to the house, and throw a sheet over them just for that one more night. That's a little bit low. I mean, it's not freezing, but still, it's a little bit of a stressor on the plants.
Okay. Well, the calls, they're coming in by the truckload here. Let's grab another phone call. Reed's calling in from North Branch this morning. Hi, Reed. What is your question?
Hi. I have an apple tree that died over the stressful summer, and I was wondering if it would be a good idea to plant wisteria or some flowering vine underneath it, or what options for that?
Sure. I would probably plant a smaller vine than the one, and I'm sorry for the loss of your tree, Reed. I would plant a smaller vine, like maybe a clematis or something like that. The wisteria is going to get really, really, really big and heavy, and it will just crush that tree. In like 5 years, the whole thing will be on the ground because the tree will have rotted back, and the wisteria will get so big and heavy and basically kill the tree. Unless you're thinking in a year or two you're going to put up a substantial trellis or arbor for the wisteria. Otherwise, I'd go with a smaller vine, maybe a clematis, and then in the meantime, even grow, you could grow small squashes up there that could be attractive, or small runner beans, vining. These are annuals that you could grow that would kind of take over until the clematis could get a little bit bigger.
All right. Before we take a quick break, I'd like to pick up on one more phone call before we make that break. Adeline's calling in from Chanhassen this morning. Good morning, Adeline. What is your question?
Yes, I have a question about a plant called Thunderstruck. Are you familiar with that?
I am not. Do you know what
it
kind of a plant
30
it
inches.
Is?
It's, I don't know what the term is. It's like Sengis or something like that, the category of plants. Sengis or something like that?
I'm not familiar
not
with
that. Ringing
what kind
a
of
bell.
Question? No, what
okay.
kind of a question do you have on it?
Well, I was wondering if you were familiar with it, and I would like to get a plant like that, but I don't know anything about that class of plants.
I guess I'll just have to try it.
Well, you know what? Let's do this, Teresa.
You know, it might be a crepe myrtle plant, and I'm not sure it's going to be hardy for us.
It's called sedum thunderhead.
Oh, if it's a sedum, let me do some research and I'll shout it out as soon as
Let's do that. We're going to take a break, Adeline, and Teresa, hang on. You can do your little homework. We'll take a break and be right back. 651-461-9226 on our Smart Garden Show every Saturday morning in the 8 o'clock hour. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those questions. Stay with us here on 830-WCCO. I think I worked with that guy. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Denny Long, along with Teresa Rooney, Master Gardener, answering those lawn and garden questions, which there are many. Do you do your homework, Teresa?
I did my homework even without coffee. I'm on the ball here. Hey, Adeline, that Thunderhead sedum, go ahead, put it. It's hardy to zone 4, so as long as you're in zone 4 or warmer, zone 4, 5, 6, whatever. Hardy to zone 4 will love a really hot, sunny, dry place. Don't feed it. And if you have a good soil or bad soil in the hot, dry, sunny place, put it in the bad soil. It will prefer that. Don't overfeed it. Don't overwater it. But it'll be absolutely gorgeous. It'll be just covered with bees and everything, especially as you go into the August and September and October.
All right, very good. Let's hear from another Teresa. Teresa, this one in Manorville this morning. Hi, Teresa. What is your question?
Hey, good morning. I love the show. We're going to be moving later this summer, and I want to bring with us a rose bush, and it's about probably 7 feet tall, 5 feet wide. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's an old-fashioned rose type.
Mm-hmm.
Can I dig that out?
Yep. What I would do right now.
What's the best way to bring it with? It does have one little sucker off the side.
Mm-hmm.
I would wait till after, like, the first bloom.
Cut it back. You can wait till it blooms if you want to. What I would do this weekend or next weekend, I would do a root pruning where you go around with a shovel and you cut straight down all around the plant how big of a root ball you want to bring. Keep it really well watered because that will cut a lot of the big roots off. Keep it really well watered. As soon as it's done blooming, you can trim it back as far as you need to. And then just before you move, cut in that same area again around it and then cut underneath it to break all of the roots. By cutting early now around, you're starting to put it in like a container. And inside of that cut, new feeder roots will be forming. So it will have a lot of new feeder roots forming. And then when you pull it up in August or September, whenever you move, it's going to have a bigger root system than it normally would. It will have a lot of new baby feeder roots in there for you. And then just when you transplant it, put it in at the same level that you dug it up at. Make sure it's in full sun and just kind of baby it for the next year or two. Keep it well watered, fertilized as needed, and then do protect it from the rabbits. Good luck.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
Let's get a lawn question in here this morning. This texter says, I dormant seeded last fall. The new grass came up okay in some areas, but very thin in others. At what point can I add more grass seed?
I would add more grass seed sooner rather than later. You want to get it before the weather gets hot. Understand that when you're putting down that new grass seed in that area, you cannot put down your crabgrass preventer. So you have to decide which way you're going to go with that. I'd probably go with thickening up the lawn first, and then next year working on the crabgrass preventer in that area if needed. But overseed as quickly as possible. If you can get out there today before the rains, that's even better.
I think in looking at the forecast, too, that same thing is on my mind. I think this would be a great week, a good week to do it
because
cool overnights and, nice, not real hot days. So,
right, the ground is warm enough to get that seed growing. Buy the correct seed for the correct place. Make sure you have hot, sunny, or shady mix, whatever you're getting. Do the correct seed. Do it at this. Don't overseed too heavily, but overseed so you have like 5 or 6 seeds per square inch, if you can imagine that density in your mind. That way you don't crowd out the seeds. And you may want to purchase a floating row cover or that white Rime fabric, that white polyspun fabric, to protect it unless you like to feed the birds.
All right, which we do, too, but that's another story.
Bird seed is expensive bird food.
It is. A listener wants to know, have we had enough rain to give our 40-foot majestic trees a good drink of water?
It depends on where you are. If you're in the southern part, you probably have enough rain. That doesn't say you can't give them more or to watch in case we go droughty again this summer. But if you're figuring out, you know, do I need to keep watering? You know, see what the tree is telling you. Is it leafing out normally? Does it look happy? Are the leaves full size like they should be? If it's a flowering tree, is it flowering normally? Then you should be okay. But yeah, this rain has been wonderful for our plants.
Okay. This listener planted a butterfly bush last year. Does it grow from the bottom? Because what's left from last year seems dead.
It can die back from the bottom. The buddleias can die back from the bottom. And so it should re-sprout again. Many of them are zone 5. So if you're in a zone 3 or a zone 4A, you're really kind of pushing it if it didn't have any protection, especially because, well, we had a mild winter, but it depends on how cold it was in your area and what zone you're at. And then just double check, make sure that the buddleia, you know, it should be coming up from the roots. You should start to see some growth soon.
This listener, and I was trying to think of the active ingredient because you and your colleagues have mentioned it. What is the active ingredient that will kill Creeping Charlie, and how do you spell it? What is that in there?
I think it's triclosan. And I think
it rings a bell.
Yep. Yeah, so it's triclosophyr. I'm not good. Anyway, just look for the plants that the product is supposed to be killing on the side. If it doesn't say Creeping Charlie, even if it has triclosan on the front, don't use it. You want to make sure Creeping Charlie is listed as one of the plants that the product is effective against, and then read and follow all label instructions, because the label is the law. And when I say read the label, I mean read the entire label.
Yeah.
Peel off the package. Look at that long little thing that you need to read. Get out your glasses or your magnifier and read the entire label.
No, you and your colleagues always recommend that. That is good advice. I know we're going to take a break and have a look at that forecast. We'll see exactly what the weather folks are talking about the rest of the weekend and this coming week, so hang with us. We have about another half hour of the show to go. Call us or text us with your lawn or garden question at 651-461-9226. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney with us on News Talk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering all of your lawn and garden questions, of which there are many, as usual. Teresa, let's grab this one here. Suggestions on when to fertilize peonies and with what type of fertilizer?
Any fertilizer work, you can top dress with compost. You could use a garden fertilizer for flowers, like a 10-10-10, or if you're going organic, you know, anything like a kelp or a fish emulsion, anything like that will work just fine. I would fertilize them right now. They've come up, at least mine are about a foot high or taller probably. So go ahead and fertilize them now and enjoy the blooms.
All right. Picking up another phone call this Saturday morning, Wayne is calling in from Forest Lake. Hi, Wayne. What is your question?
I don't have a question. I have maybe a remedy for people calling in with their problems with Creeping Charlie.
Okay.
A very simple cure for that is take about a 50-50 percent vinegar and salt or salt solution, and you could take a spray bottle or a three-gallon sprayer and spray that on the Creeping Charlie. I just about guarantee you'll kill it dead as a doornail.
Hmm.
The caveat is, however, if you get it on the grass, it's probably going to kill that too. But
yeah, that's the trade-off.
So what I would suggest is that's you can use that. I would worry that it's so heavy in the salt and the vinegar and the salt itself that you may actually sterilize the soil. So if you want to go organic like that, there are vinegars on the market. Make sure that they are labeled for Creeping Charlie and go that route on it. Otherwise, if you do have Creeping Charlie questions, and thanks for your suggestion, Wayne, I would suggest going to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and look up our friend Creeping Charlie and decide, oh no, I love Creeping Charlie and I'm just going to let it go, or I need to kill it, and this is how and when to kill it according to the Extension website.
And I did remember finally that the previous caller or texter wanted to know what the chemical was, the herbicide for creeping to triclopyr.
Triclopyr.
So look for that. But read the label.
I can see it in my mind. I can't say it or spell it, but I can see it in my mind.
I can relate. here's an interesting one, and maybe you can help me with this. Instead of potting soil, or instead of peat moss, this listener has been hearing talk about COIR. What is that?
Okay, so it's coir, coconut coir. It's actually some of the parts of the coconut that we don't eat. And you want to buy coconut coir that has been buffered because it's very salty otherwise, and they have to wash it very well. If you're not sure about it, that it doesn't say buffered on it, then I would use it on one plant and plant in that and see how it goes. If it hasn't been buffered, it's going to be so salty. And again, salt can sterilize your soil and kill your plants. So you want to be careful with that. Hopefully it has been buffered well, and then go ahead and use it. It's a great alternative to the peat moss. I know they use it more in England and Europe because they have less peat bogs than we do. And there's just sometimes the issues about the peat bogs, and we have a lot in Canada. But harvesting, and it takes 1,000 years for the to recover, and it's just there's a lot of issues going on. And then the coconut coir has to be shipped via ship from the islands where coconuts grow. So there's just issues with everything. So you just go ahead and do research on it. But it's coconut coir, COIR, and make sure you buy something that says buffered, BUFFERED. That means it's been washed.
Very good. Here's something for you to think about, and maybe even a candidate to check out the website. What flowering annual can I plant in a wall of cinder blocks that will hang over or cascade down over the blocks?
You could try something. There's a lot of them. Nasturtiums would work really well in there. Brown-eyed Susan vine could work really well in there. There's a lot of, depending upon how hot it gets there, there's an awful lot of beautiful, beautiful annuals that will flower wonderful for you. Alyssum would work really well. There's so many. So go to your garden centers and tell them you want a vine or a spilling over plant, a spiller plant, a vining plant that can grow in whether it's a shade or hot sun. And then just do keep it watered because they might dry out a little more in the cinder blocks.
Listener has a long question about winterizer. They used a winterizer in the fall in their lawn, and their question is it too early to fertilize this spring? My lawn looks great right now.
Yep, your lawn looks great because you used that winterizer last year. That was good on you. If your lawn is up and growing and you're going to be doing a high-intensity feeding routine, you can go ahead and start doing that now if you want to. As long as your lawn is up and growing, read and follow the instructions on the package according to how thick to put it on, how much to put it on.
Next listener has had issues with the grubs in past seasons. Their question is, well, they say this might be a silly question, but by keeping outside lights on each night for security reasons, am I inviting, quotes, beetles to hang out in my yard? I've heard that beetles are drawn to light. I have had issues with grubs in the past season, and I do keep several outside lights on at night. What do you think of that?
I haven't heard that about beetles. Most of the beetles I know that are active at night would not like to be in the light because they're active at night, hence they're in the dark. And they are usually under the little twigs and rocks and things like that. That's where they're hiding. So they're not usually out in the light. But so I wouldn't I don't know that that will impact if you get worms, grubs, I'm sorry, if you get grubs, because some of those are moth grubs too, so they come out during the daytime, so you'll have grubs from those also. And of course, Japanese beetles are always fun. I would say think about your outside lights. Do you really need them? If it's a security issue, okay, but if you can minimize the light pollution, that really helps more of the insects like our lightning bugs and fireflies and things like that to come back to us. They can't handle the light, and then you have birds and other migrating species that are kind of drawn off with the lights. So if you can minimize what lights you have outside, and I'm not saying if you need security out there, you put the lights on, that's just fine. But save some money and buy a latte instead with the money you save from not having all the lights on, and you may be able to see some fireflies if you keep most of the lights off.
Okay. This listener sent a text about, you can help me with this, some kind of false spirea. They have three of them, 4 years old, and want to know if they are an invasive plant. They are getting little shoots that are popping up and long roots growing under the landscape material.
Yep. I would say they're not invasive, but they are very aggressive plants. They like to make a thicket, which is like a whole bunch of plants taking over a hillside. So they're great to plant on the hillsides. You'll sometimes even see them planted on the hillsides on our freeways. So they will run. They will send out stolons. They will send out roots. They are a plant that wants to thicket. They're not a single stem plant. They want to be a big bunch of plants.
Okay. Again, a listener wants to know if I may do this. Well, you said it too. They want to know the spelling of triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R.
There we go.
Triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R.
You know, it's amazing what Denny's learned. He should be a master gardener.
You know, you've tempted me, but I don't want to embarrass your group.
You got enough stuff going on, Denny.
I guess. This listener, Teresa, planted a pussy willow near the pond. They live on it. The pond keeps rising. They moved it once because it was underwater, which is happening again. They want to know how long those pussy willows will survive partly submerged, do you think?
If it's only partly submerged, they'll be okay. If they're going to be underwater, say, for a month or two, those roots need oxygen. They need to have some oxygen. I don't know if you can pull them up and plant them higher or plant them on a real tall mound so that the roots can reach down into the water and they won't get drowned again from the pond. But I would say if you're going a week, that's okay if they're underwater. If they get submerged 2, 3, 4 weeks, you could possibly lose the plant.
Here's another lawn question before we take a quick break. The texter says, I've heard fine fescue has deeper roots than bluegrass. Can I gradually convert bluegrass lawn to fine fescue by overseeding?
Yes, you can. Fine fescue is a bunching grass, so it'll slowly fill up, and it does get a little bit taller, so that's why its roots can grow a little bit deeper, and it can take a little more shade and a little less fertilizer.
Best grass seed for a very shady area? I would guess dense shade seed. What do you think?
A dense shade mix, and that'll have a lot of fescue.
Best grass seed for a very shady area? I would guess dense shade seed. What do you think?
A dense shade mix, and that'll have a lot of fescue in it for you.
Yeah.
And even then, grass is a full sun plant, so it's never going to be as full as it could be in the sun.
Good point. Hang on, Teresa. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering those lawn and garden questions today. By the way, coming along next hour on our Home Improvement Show, it's going to be, what do they call it, an encore performance. Andy Lindis is at a graduation today, we've learned. And he requests us to hear last week's show. So we'll do that. That's next hour on our Home Improvement Show. In the meantime, we'll be right back with more lawn and garden talk on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Thank you. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering all of those lawn and garden questions, of which there are many. Let's see, Teresa, how many folks we can help out. You know what I wanted to mention before? We always like to mention the Arboretum any time of the year, but this is such a great time, is it not?
It is amazing. There's plant walks out there. There's Books in Bloom featuring the Seed Keeper over in the Anderson Library. There's a plant sale next week. There's May Markets, a Bud Break Run. If you're into that crazy running stuff, that's going on soon. There are lilacs, the tulips, the magnolias are blooming. There's so much. Buy your ticket because you do need to reserve your ticket early or a time for good parking. And just go out there and enjoy it. It's a gem. It's amazing.
Yeah, again, making those reservations online mm-hmm. is the key. This listener, Teresa, says, I winter my hibiscus and I'm battling white flies. Will I get rid of them once I put them outdoors?
Probably. A lot of the critters that like to eat white flies will show up and eat those white flies, so you'll see a lot less. What you may want to do is just watch for them next year a little bit earlier. Start looking in January into February, and the Extension website has some really good ideas about how to battle white flies and other houseplant pests. The houseplants are so happy outside during the summer, but then you bring them into the house in the winter, and it's dark and it's dry, and they're just really stressing, so they get infected with a lot of different pests. But, yep, it should be fine once you can get her outside.
All right. Listener says, hi, I live in Woodbury, and I have a lot of deer and rabbits. Well, welcome to the club.
I'm sorry.
it seems all my hostas are gone. Will they grow back from the roots, and do those animals eat them?
Those animals love the hostas. It's like a fresh green salad, the first fresh green salad of the season, or us with our asparagus and strawberries. We love those things in the spring. You may want to, they should come back. If you can put some protection out there, I'd put some fencing out there, or at least some repellents that will work. Change up the repellents with different fragrances. Say every 2 weeks, change it up. So one time it might be blood meal, and the next time it's garlic and eggs, and the next time it's a very chemical smell or rotten eggs or something. And so you keep changing it up. But you've got to protect those things so that they can come up. They can't come back from ever from the ground if they keep being eaten to the ground. So you've got to let them get some leaves on them.
All right. This listener would like to plant a hydrangea tree on the southwest corner of the house as a focal point. Any particular variety you suggest?
You know, the Arboretum has a lot of great hydrangeas in their hydrangea test bed. I would go out there and look at the different hydrangeas, the tree forms and the bush forms, and then also go to the Extension website. They've got some great information on hydrangeas there, especially the pruning to keep it in a good shape. Those would be my first two so that you can see what it looks like in person. But there's so many out there that I couldn't even begin to start to tell you, but there's a lot of choices.
This listener, and I know we've heard this before, has a moss taking over my grass. How do you control it?
First of all, moss is beautiful, so maybe just let it go. However, moss likes to live in a place with low fertility, usually a little bit of extra moisture, a little bit darker, kind of shady. I have seen moss in the wild growing right out in the hot sun, so it's the low fertility. You need to maybe take out the moss, add a little bit of compost or something to bring up the fertility in the soil. You can always get a soil test through the university. It's an excellent way to see and tell them you're growing grass, and they'll give you some suggestions if you need to add something extra to the soil. But those are things you can do. So you can dig it up and then sprinkle over some compost and plant some grass seed there, and just try to bring up the fertility is probably what you're looking. You might have compacted soils there too, so you may want to think about some aeration in August into September.
I remember when back in my backyard there was really compacted soil, and there was more shade at the time too. Mm-hmm. And once I aerated and got looser soil, it disappeared. So
yep, it's I mean moss. Each plant has its niche, so yeah. If it's a real bad niche for grass, it might be a good niche for moss. So now we have to figure out how can we make it a better growing spot for grass rather than moss.
There you go. This listener, Teresa, planted a young tree last September, and now they would like to put it in a different location. Can I dig it up and move it safely is the question.
Sure. It hasn't rooted out that much. So I would do that sooner rather than later, unless it's in a big flowering phase right now, if it's an apple tree or something. You know, maybe you can even pick off all the flowers and the fruit this year just to let it get more acclimated. But dig up as much of the root ball as you can, have the other hole already in there, and then already dug, and put it in the right spot. And make sure you look up so that there's no wires and that you've anticipated, yep, this is where this tree can get full growth in this area. And then you're ready to go. Go ahead and do it right away.
All right. Listener says this, are the jumping worms still a problem? If so, how do you get rid of them?
Jumping worms are a problem. We will have jumping worms till the end of time now, probably, unless we get another ice age coming down and taking us all out. So jumping worms are here if you have them. If you don't have them, you may in the future. The university is working on things. Many of the universities are working on products or some practical things that we can do for our jumping worms so we don't have them and they don't impact our gardens as much. But, yep, they're here. Oh, joy.
I wanted to take a moment to shout out to our friend Julie Weisenhorn.
Yes.
Who is doing a bit of recovery from
get better, Julie.
Yeah.
Nothing major. Nothing scary.
No.
Get better,
not
Julie.
At all. Not at all. And we'll have Julie on here real quick. I know, in the next week or two, in fact. So.
She's just living the life of luxury now.
I
you
love
know,
it, yeah. And her
hobby is just waiting on her hand and foot, and you know how that goes.
Anyway, feel better, Julie. I know she'll be back.
Yeah.
One more question. My amaryllis did not bloom this year. I have it sitting where it gets good sunshine. Should I continue to fertilize it throughout the summer?
If it's actively growing, yes, do continue to fertilize it throughout the summer. If you can even give it some outside sunlight, that would probably be better. It probably just didn't get quite enough light to build up that bulb for a flower this season.
Oh, let's see if we can help out some more folks here. I know we got about a minute to go. How can I get rid of my perennial garden with thistles?
What I would do is the easiest way is just to cut them at the base, and then as soon as they grow more, cut them again and keep cutting them. It's going to be a long, but that's the easiest way, so you're not disturbing the soil and you're not using chemicals and you're not disturbing your other plants. Just keep cutting them as soon as you see them grow. Cut those leaves off right away. Just keep cutting it at the base. Eventually, you will starve the root. It may take a while, but you can do it.
Minute to go. How do I get tall lilacs to grow bushier?
You'll need to probably cut them back a little bit to encourage growth from the roots. So
again,
look at renewal pruning at the extension website, extension.umn.edu.
Like you girls always say, if you and your colleagues, if you trim it at a certain time of year, you're not going to get the buds, right? The blooms.
Yep, you'll be cutting off flowers this time of year. If you don't care, that's not a problem.
All right, but we care. And we care that you'll come back, Teresa. Would you
do that?
I will.
And may I just say one more thing? May the fourth be with you. Had to do it, Denny. Had to do it.
You had to do it, of course.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you so much. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney here on 830 WCCO. The rain should be ceasing here in the next 2-3 hours or so, according to the forecast. Should be a nice day near 61. A beautiful Sunday tomorrow. Sunny with near 69 the high. Right now, 47 degrees on 830 WCCO. And on this Saturday morning, the 4th of May, I am joined by Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Denny.
Oh, my. Things are really greening up. Oh,
they certainly are. This rain is amazing.
It really is. And I know, according to the forecast, it should be clearing up here in 3-4 hours or so is kind of what it looks like. But things, much needed rain, and I'm glad to see it. And we're glad you're back here on the radio, Teresa. Let's invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question to ask Teresa, by all means, call it in or text it in, 651-461-9226. And while we're waiting for our listeners to join us, what's on your mind this morning, Teresa?
Well, I just wanted to share with everyone that we are having plant sales. It's the plant sale time of the year.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, there is one out at the Arboretum next the 10th, whichever that day is, Saturday or Sunday. So check the Arboretum because they have a fantastic plant sale. But lots of the Master Gardeners will be having plant sales too. So check with your local Master Gardener group. I know in Hennepin County and Ramsey County, we have our plant sales on the 18th, which is the following Saturday. So we hope you can all come and get plants. I don't know about Ramsey County that much, but Hennepin County will have over 22,000 plants. Many of them grown by Master Gardeners, none of them pulled from our soil, so you don't have to worry about jumping worms. We've either purchased them or grown them on ourselves. We'll have perennials and annuals and flowers and vegetables and herbs and native plants, and we'll have lots of Master Gardeners there to answer your question, and we'll have an info booth too if you have questions. So bring your questions. Our sale is from 9 to 2, but we're usually done by about 11 or 12. We do run out of plants. So come and join us.
This is the 18th?
It's the 18th, Saturday
the 18th. Saturday the 18th, and where?
Ours is at the Hopkins Pavilion in Hopkins.
Okay.
And the Ramsey one is at a Aldrich Ice Center, I think it is, but
okay.
Double check with them.
Sure. Well, all right. That's great info. Yeah, this is that time of year. Boy, I'm looking at the texts that are zooming in here as we speak.
Oh, good.
651-461-9226. This came in earlier, actually. They wanted to ask you briefly to talk about calla lily bulbs. I've never had them before. Love the show. Well, thank you for that. How about the calla lily?
Sure. So these are bulbs. They're bulbs, and they're annuals for us. They're a very tender annual. You plant them up. You can get them planted now. They like to grow in the shade, and they're just absolutely beautiful. They're those very structural, single lilies that are just absolutely gorgeous. And then you do have to pull them up and store them over winter, and the Extension website will have some information about how to store them. But they're absolutely beautiful flowers.
Okay. Phone calls as well coming in. Let's grab one. Mary Lou, calling in from Crystal this morning. Hi, Mary Lou. What is your question for Master Gardener Teresa Rooney? Hello, Mary Lou.
Yeah, hi. Sorry. We have a new phone, and I kind of messed up.
Okay.
I understand.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, I have a question about Pachycendra and wild ginger. Mm-hmm. I have both. I love them both. But is it true that neither one of them like to be touched or messed with? I try to clean it up, and when I did with my Pachycendra, it just kind of isn't growing now. It's like I, you know, injured it in a way.
You might have damaged some growth that was just coming up that was very tender. I've never noticed. I haven't grown Pachycendra. I do grow the wild ginger, and I haven't noticed that it's particularly not susceptible to being damaged. They do have bigger, fleshier stems, so you can break them, but they'll come back up again. You should be just fine. So next year, you may want to just either clean it out a little bit earlier, or if it's not too bad, just leave it and let the Pachycendra come up around whatever is on top of it. It usually outcompetes any weeds and can come up above the leaves, and then the leaves just break down and add nutrition to the soil. So it should be okay, Mary Lou.
All right, very good. Let's move to Mound, Minnesota. Kathy calling in from Mound. Hi, Kathy. What is your question?
Well, good morning, Denny. Thank you. And good morning, Teresa. My question, Teresa, is it too late to prune a grapevine?
Kathy, I'm not. I believe it is. But I want to send you to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. You could do some pruning on it. I don't know that you would want to cut it all the way back like you would have earlier in the season. I'm going to defer to the Extension website because my grapevines just get a little crazy and I don't prune them like I should. So I'm not totally up to date on when is the best pruning. I know early spring is better. So I'm going to refer you, Kathy, over to the Extension website. Sorry about that.
Yep, extension.umn.edu. Great, yep. Great resource. This listener, Teresa, says we've been gifted 1 foot tall spruce and pine trees. Could we leave them potted for a couple of years or put them in their forever home? If left potted, how do we care for them?
It would be better if they could get into their forever home if you can get the water out to them, because you're going to have to water them to make sure they're very established for the first few years. If you're going to keep them in pots, you would need to take those pots just before, say, into September and October, sink the pots into the ground, give them a good drink of water, and then do a little bit of covering with some straw or some leaves to give it a little bit of protection, and then pull them back up in the spring. You could do that in case you're thinking, I want to put them in a different place in a few years, and that we're taking time to get to that. We have to build the garage or whatever the situation is. So either way, but you're going to have to sink them into the ground in the winter time. They need to be outside.
Teresa was looking in regards to this next text about our low overnight temp tonight, which is predicted to be about 43. But the listener says they have hanging baskets of dragon wing begonias, petunias, geraniums. The temp, as I said, is supposed to fall to the low 40s tonight. Will these flowers be safe outside, or do they need to be protected?
You know, they'd probably be safe, but I would bring them in at least. Into the garage, or at least toss something over them. Maybe take them off of the hangers where they are, and set them close to the house, and throw a sheet over them just for that one more night. That's a little bit low. I mean, it's not freezing, but still, it's a little bit of a stressor on the plants.
Okay. Well, the calls, they're coming in by the truckload here. Let's grab another phone call. Reed's calling in from North Branch this morning. Hi, Reed. What is your question?
Hi. I have an apple tree that died over the stressful summer, and I was wondering if it would be a good idea to plant wisteria or some flowering vine underneath it, or what options for that?
Sure. I would probably plant a smaller vine than the one, and I'm sorry for the loss of your tree, Reed. I would plant a smaller vine, like maybe a clematis or something like that. The wisteria is going to get really, really, really big and heavy, and it will just crush that tree. In like 5 years, the whole thing will be on the ground because the tree will have rotted back, and the wisteria will get so big and heavy and basically kill the tree. Unless you're thinking in a year or two you're going to put up a substantial trellis or arbor for the wisteria. Otherwise, I'd go with a smaller vine, maybe a clematis, and then in the meantime, even grow, you could grow small squashes up there that could be attractive, or small runner beans, vining. These are annuals that you could grow that would kind of take over until the clematis could get a little bit bigger.
All right. Before we take a quick break, I'd like to pick up on one more phone call before we make that break. Adeline's calling in from Chanhassen this morning. Good morning, Adeline. What is your question?
Yes, I have a question about a plant called Thunderstruck. Are you familiar with that?
I am not. Do you know what
it
kind of plant
30
it
inches.
Is?
It's, I don't know what the term is. It's like Sengis or something like that, the category of plants. Sengis or something like that?
I'm not familiar with that.
Not ringing
a
bell.
No, what kind of a question do you have on it?
Well, I was wondering if you were familiar with it, and I would like to get a plant like that, but I don't know anything about that class of plants.
I guess I'll just have to try it.
Well, you know what? Let's do this, Teresa.
You know, it might be a crepe myrtle plant, and I'm not sure it's going to be hardy for us.
It's called sedum thunderhead.
Oh, if it's a sedum. Let me do some research and I'll shout it out as soon as
let's do
back.
That. We're going to take a break, Adeline, and Teresa, hang on. You can do your little homework. We'll take a break and be right back. 651-461-9226 on our Smart Garden Show every Saturday morning in the 8 o'clock hour. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those questions. Stay with us here on 830 WCCO. I think I worked with that guy. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Denny Long, along with Teresa Rooney, Master Gardener, answering those lawn and garden questions, which there are many. Do you do your homework, Teresa?
I did my homework even without coffee. I'm on the ball here. Hey, Adeline, that Thunderhead sedum, go ahead, put it. It's hardy to zone 4, so as long as you're in zone 4 or warmer, zone 4, 5, 6, whatever. Hardy to zone 4 will love a really hot, sunny, dry place. Don't feed it. And if you have a good soil or bad soil in the hot, dry, sunny place, put it in the bad soil. It will prefer that. Don't overfeed it. Don't overwater it. But it'll be absolutely gorgeous. It'll be just covered with bees and everything, especially as you go into the August and September and October.
Right, very good. Let's hear from another Teresa. Teresa, this one in Manorville this morning. Hi, Teresa. What is your question?
Hey, good morning. I love the show. We're going to be moving later this summer, and I want to bring with us a rose bush, and it's about probably 7 feet tall, 5 feet wide. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's an old-fashioned rose type.
Mm-hmm.
Can I dig that out? Will it?
Yep. What I would do right now.
What's the best way to bring it with? It does have one little sucker off the side.
Mm-hmm.
If I should wait till after, like the first bloom.
Cut it back. You can wait till it blooms if you want to. What I would do this weekend or next weekend, I would do a root pruning where you go around with a shovel and you cut straight down all around the plant how big of a root ball you want to bring. Keep it really well watered because that will cut a lot of the big roots off. Keep it really well watered. As soon as it's done blooming, you can trim it back as far as you need to. And then just before you move, cut in that same area again around it and then cut underneath it to break all of the roots. By cutting early now around, you're starting to put it in like a container. And inside of that cut, new feeder roots will be forming. So it will have a lot of new feeder roots forming. And then when you pull it up in August or September, whenever you move, it's going to have a bigger root system than it normally would. It will have a lot new lot of new baby feeder roots in there for you. And then just when you transplant it, put it in at the same level that you dug it up at. Make sure it's in full sun and just kind of baby it for the next year or two. Keep it well watered, fertilized as needed, and then do protect it from the rabbits. Good luck.
All right, very good.
Okay.
Let's get a lawn question in here this morning. This texter says, I dormant seeded last fall. The new grass came up okay in some areas, but very thin in others. At what point can I add more grass seed?
I would add more grass seed sooner rather than later. You want to get it before the weather gets hot. Understand that when you're putting down that new grass seed in that area, you cannot put down your crabgrass preventer. So you have to decide which way you're going to go with that. I'd probably go with thickening up the lawn first, and then next year working on the crabgrass preventer in that area if needed. But overseed as quickly as possible. If you can get out there today before the rains, that's even better.
I think in looking at the forecast, too, because that same thing is on my mind. I think this would be a great week, a good week to do it because, cool overnights and, nice, not real hot days. So,
right, and the ground is warm enough to get that seed growing. Buy the correct seed for the correct place. Make sure you have hot, sunny, or shady mix, whatever you're getting. Do the correct seed. Do it at this. Don't overseed too heavily, but overseed so you have like 5 or 6 seeds per square inch, if you can imagine that density in your mind. That way you don't crowd out the seeds. And you may want to purchase a floating row cover or that white Remay fabric, that white polyspun fabric, to protect it unless you like to feed the birds.
All right, which we do too, but that's another story.
Bird seed is expensive bird food.
It is. A listener wants to know, have we had enough rain to give our 40-foot majestic trees a good drink of water?
It depends on where you are. If you're in the southern part, you probably have enough rain. That doesn't say you can't give them more or to watch in case we go droughty again this summer. But if you're figuring out, do I need to keep watering? See what the tree is telling you. Is it leafing out normally? Does it look happy? Are the leaves full size like they should be? If it's a flowering tree, is it flowering normally? Then you should be okay. But this rain has been wonderful for our plants.
Okay. This listener planted a butterfly bush last year. Does it grow from the bottom? Because what's left from last year seems dead.
It can die back from the bottom. The buddleias can die back from the bottom. And so it should resprout again. Many of them are zone 5. So if you're in a zone 3 or a zone 4A, you're really kind of pushing it if it didn't have any protection, especially because, well, we had a mild winter, but it depends on how cold it was in your area and what zone you're at. And then just double check, make sure that the buddleia, you know, it should be coming up from the roots. You should start to see some growth soon.
This listener, and I'm trying to think of the active ingredient because you and your colleagues have mentioned it. What is the active ingredient that will kill Creeping Charlie, and how do you spell it? What is that in there?
I think it's triclosan. And I think
it rings a bell.
Yep. Yeah, so it's triclosophyr. I'm not good. Anyway, just look for the plants that the product is supposed to be killing on the side. If it doesn't say Creeping Charlie, even if it has triclosan on the front, don't use it. You want to make sure Creeping Charlie is listed as one of the plants that the product is effective against, and then read and follow all label instructions, because the label is the law. And when I say read the label, I mean read the entire label.
Yeah.
Peel off the package. Look at that long little thing that you need to read. Get out your glasses or your magnifier and read the entire label.
No, you and your colleagues always recommend that. That is good advice. I know we're going to take a break and have a look at that forecast. We'll see exactly what the weather folks are talking about the rest of the weekend and this coming week, so hang with us. We have about another half hour of the show to go. Call us or text us with your lawn or garden question at 651-461-9226. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney with us on News Talk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering all of your lawn and garden questions, of which there are many, as usual. Teresa, let's grab this one here. Suggestions on when to fertilize peonies and with what type of fertilizer?
Any fertilizer work. You can top dress with compost. You could use a garden fertilizer for flowers, like a 10-10-10, or if you're going organic, anything like a kelp or a fish emulsion, anything like that will work just fine. I would fertilize them right now. They've come up, at least mine are about a foot high or taller probably. So go ahead and fertilize them now and enjoy the blooms.
All right. Picking up another phone call this Saturday morning, Wayne is calling in from Forest Lake. Hi, Wayne. What is your question?
I don't have a question. I have maybe a remedy for people calling in with their problems with Creeping Charlie.
Okay.
A very simple cure for that is take about a 50-50 percent vinegar and salt or salt solution, and you could take a spray bottle or a 3-gallon sprayer and spray that on the Creeping Charlie. I just about guarantee you'll kill it dead as a doornail.
Hmm.
The caveat is, however, if you get it on the grass, it's probably going to kill that too. But
yeah, that's the trade-off.
So what I would suggest is that's you can use that. I would worry that it's so heavy in the salt and the vinegar and the salt itself that you may actually sterilize the soil. So if you want to go organic like that, there are vinegars on the market. Make sure that they are labeled for Creeping Charlie and go that route on it. Otherwise, if you do have Creeping Charlie questions, and thanks for your suggestion, Wayne, I would suggest going to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and look up our friend Creeping Charlie and decide, oh no, I love Creeping Charlie and I'm just going to let it go, or I need to kill it, and this is how and when to kill it according to the Extension website.
And I did remember finally that the previous caller or texter wanted to know what the chemical was, the herbicide for mm-hmm. Creeping to triclopyr.
Triclopyr. Not
triclopyr.
Triclopyr.
Yeah, triclopyr. So look for that. But read the label.
I can see it in my mind. I can't yeah. say it or spell it, but I can see it in my mind.
I can relate. here's an interesting one, and maybe you can help me with this. Instead of potting soil, or instead of peat moss, this listener has been hearing talk about COIR.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Okay, so it's core, coconut core. It's actually some of the parts of the coconut that we don't eat. And you want to buy coconut core that has been buffered because it's very salty otherwise, and they have to wash it very well. If you're not sure about it, that it doesn't say buffered on it, then I would use it on one plant and plant in that and see how it goes. If it hasn't been buffered, it's going to be so salty. And again, salt can sterilize your soil and kill your plants. So you want to be careful with that. Hopefully it has been buffered well, and then go ahead and use it. It's a great alternative to the peat moss. I know they use it more in England and Europe because they have less peat bogs than we do. And there's just sometimes the issues about the peat bogs, and we have a lot in Canada. But harvesting, and it takes 1,000 years for the to recover, and it's just there's a lot of issues going on. And then the coconut core has to be shipped via ship from the islands where coconuts grow. So there's just issues with everything. So you just go ahead and do research on it. But it's coconut core, COIR, and make sure you buy something that says buffered, BUFFERED. That means it's okay. Been washed.
Very good. Here's something for you to think about, and maybe even a candidate to check out the website. What flowering annual can I plant in a wall of cinder blocks that will hang over or cascade down over the blocks?
You could try something. There's a lot of them. Nasturtiums would work really well in there. Brown-eyed Susan vine could work really well in there. There's a lot of, depending upon how hot it gets there, there's an awful lot of beautiful, beautiful annuals that will flower wonderful for you. Alyssum would work really well. There's so many. So go to your garden centers and tell them you want a vine or a spilling over plant, a spiller plant, a vining plant that can grow in whether it's a shade or hot sun. And then just do keep it watered because they might dry out a little more in the cinder blocks.
Listener has a lawn question about winterizer. They used a winterizer in the fall in their lawn, and their question is it too early to fertilize this spring? My lawn looks great right now.
Yep, your lawn looks great because you used that winterizer last year. That was good on you. If your lawn is up and growing and you're going to be doing a high-intensity feeding routine, you can go ahead and start doing that now if you want to. As long as your lawn is up and growing, read and follow the instructions on the package according to how thick to put it on, how much to put it on.
Next listener has had issues with grubs in past seasons. Their question is, well, they say this might be a silly question, but by keeping outside lights on each night for security reasons, am I inviting, quotes, beetles to hang out in my yard? I've heard that beetles are drawn to light. I have had issues with grubs in the past season, and I do keep several outside lights on at night. What do you think of that?
I haven't heard that about beetles. Most of the beetles I know that are active at night would not like to be in the light because they're active at night, hence they're in the dark. And they are usually under the little twigs and rocks and things like that. That's where they're hiding. So they're not usually out in the light. I don't know that will impact if you get worms, grubs, I'm sorry, if you get grubs, because some of those are moth grubs too, so they come out during the daytime, so you'll have grubs from those also, and of course Japanese beetles are always fun. I would say think about your outside lights. Do you really need them? If it's a security issue, okay, but if you can minimize the light pollution, that really helps more of the insects like our lightning bugs and fireflies and things like that to come back to us. They can't handle the light, and then you have birds and other migrating species that are kind of drawn off with the lights. So if you can minimize what lights you have outside, and I'm not saying if you need security out there, you put the lights on, that's just fine. But save some money and buy a latte instead with the money you save from not having all the lights on, and you may be able to see some fireflies if you keep most of the lights off.
Okay. This listener sent a text about, you can help me with this, some kind of false spirea. They have three of them, 4 years old, and want to know if they are an invasive plant. They are getting little shoots that are popping up and long roots growing under the landscape material.
Yep. I would say they're not invasive, but they are very aggressive plants. They like to make a thicket, which is like a whole bunch of plants taking over a hillside. So they're great to plant on the hillsides. You'll sometimes even see them planted on the hillsides on our freeways. So they will run. They will send out stolons, they will send out roots. They are a plant that wants to thicket. They're not a single stem plant. They want to be a big bunch of plants.
Okay. Again, a listener wants to know if I may do this. Well, you said it too. They want to know the spelling of triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R.
There we go.
Triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R.
You know, it's amazing what Denny's learned. He should be a master gardener.
You know, you've tempted me, but I don't want to embarrass your group.
You got enough stuff going on, Denny.
I guess. This listener, Teresa, planted a pussy willow near the pond. They live on it. The pond keeps rising. They moved it once because it was underwater, which is happening again. They want to know how long those pussy willows will survive partly submerged, do you think?
If it's only partly submerged, they'll be okay. If they're going to be underwater, say, for a month or two, those roots need oxygen. They need to have some oxygen. I don't know if you can pull them up and plant them higher or plant them on a real tall mound so that the roots can reach down into the water and they won't get drowned again from the pond. But I would say if you're going a week, that's okay if they're underwater. If they get submerged 2, 3, 4 weeks, you could possibly lose the plant.
Here's another lawn question before we take a quick break. The texter says, I've heard fine fescue has deeper roots than bluegrass. Can I gradually convert bluegrass lawn to fine fescue by overseeding?
Yes, you can. Fine fescue is a bunching grass, so it'll slowly fill up, and it does get a little bit taller, so that's why its roots can grow a little bit deeper, and it can take a little more shade and a little less fertilizer.
Best grass seed for a very shady area, I would guess dense shade seed. What do you think?
A dense shade mix, and that'll have a lot of fescue.
Best grass seed for a very shady area, I would guess dense shade seed. What do you think?
A dense shade mix, and that'll have a lot of fescue in it for you.
Yeah.
Then, grass is a full sun plant, so it's never going to be as full as it could be in the sun.
Good point. Hang on, Teresa. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering those lawn and garden questions today. By the way, coming along next hour on our Home Improvement Show, it's going to be, what do they call it, an encore performance. Andy Lindis is at a graduation today, we've learned. And he requests us to hear last week's show. So we'll do that. That's next hour on our Home Improvement Show. In the meantime, we'll be right back with more lawn and garden talk on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering all of those lawn and garden questions, of which there are many. Let's see, Teresa, how many folks we can help out. You know what I wanted to mention before? We always like to mention the Arboretum any time of the year, but this is such a great time, is it not?
It is amazing. There's plant walks out there. There's Books in Bloom featuring the Seed Keeper over in the Anderson Library. There's the plant sale next week. There's May Markets. A Bud Break Run. If you're into that crazy running stuff, that's going on soon. There's lilacs. The tulips, the magnolias are blooming. There's so much. Buy your ticket because you do need to reserve your ticket early or a time for good parking. And just go out there and enjoy it. It's a gem. It's amazing.
Yeah, again, making those reservations online mm-hmm. is the key. This listener, Teresa, says, I winter my hibiscus and I'm battling white flies. Will I get rid of them once I put them outdoors?
Probably. A lot of the critters that like to eat white flies will show up and eat those white flies, so you'll see a lot less. What you may want to do is just watch for them next year a little bit earlier. Start looking in January into February, and the Extension website has some really good ideas about how to battle white flies and other houseplant pests. The houseplants are so happy outside during the summer, but then you bring them into the house in the winter, and it's, you know, it's dark and it's dry, and they're just really stressing, so they get infected with a lot of different pests. But, yep, it should be fine once you can get her outside.
All right. Listener says, hi, I live in Woodbury, and I have a lot of deer and rabbits. Well, welcome to the club.
I'm sorry.
it seems all my hostas are gone. Will they grow back from the roots, and do those animals eat them?
Those animals love the hostas. It's like a fresh green salad, the first fresh green salad of the season, or us with our asparagus and strawberries. We love those things in the spring. You may want to, they should come back. If you can put some protection out there, I'd put some fencing out there, or at least some repellents that will work. Change up the repellents with different fragrances. Say every 2 weeks, change it up. So one time it might be blood meal, and the next time it's garlic and eggs, and the next time it's a very chemical smell, or rotten eggs or something. And so you keep changing it up. But you've got to protect those things so that they can come up. They can't come back from ever from the ground if they keep being eaten to the ground. So you've got to let them get some leaves on them.
All right. This listener would like to plant a hydrangea tree on the southwest corner of the house as a focal point. Any particular variety you suggest?
You know, the Arboretum has a lot of great hydrangeas in their hydrangea test bed. I would go out there and look at the different hydrangeas, the tree forms and the bush forms, and then also go to the Extension website. They've got some great information on hydrangeas there, especially the pruning to keep it in a good shape. Those would be my first two so that you can see what it looks like in person. But there's so many out there that I couldn't even begin to start to tell you, but there's a lot of choices.
This listener, and I know we've heard this before, has a moss taking over my grass. How do you control it?
First of all, moss is beautiful, so maybe just let it go. However, moss likes to live in a place with low fertility, usually a little bit of extra moisture, a little bit darker, kind of shady. I have seen moss in the wild growing right out in the hot sun, so it's the low fertility. You need to maybe take out the moss, add a little bit of compost or something to bring up the fertility in the soil. You can always get a soil test through the university. It's an excellent way to see and tell them you're growing grass, and they'll give you some suggestions if you need to add something extra to the soil. But those are things you can do. So you can dig it up and then sprinkle over some compost and plant some grass seed there, and just try to bring up the fertility is probably what you're looking. You might have compacted soils there too, so you may want to think about some aeration in August into September.
I remember when back in my backyard there was really compacted soil, and there was more shade at the time too.
Mm-hmm.
And once I aerated and got looser soil, it disappeared. So
yep, it's moss. Each plant has its niche, so
yeah.
If it's a real bad niche for grass, it might be a good niche for moss. So now we have to figure out how can we make it a better growing spot for grass rather than moss.
There you go. This listener, Teresa, planted a young tree last September, and now they would like to put it in a different location. Can I dig it up and move it safely is the question.
Sure. Just it hasn't rooted out that much, so I would do that sooner rather than later, unless it's in a big flowering phase right now, if it's an apple tree or something. You know, maybe you can even pick off all the flowers and the fruit this year just to let it get more acclimated. But dig up as much of the root ball as you can, have the other hole already in there, and then already dug, and put it in the right spot, and make sure you look up so that there's no wires and that you've anticipated, yep, this is where this tree can get full growth in this area, and then you're ready to go. Go ahead, do it right away.
All right. Listener says this, are the jumping worms still a problem? If so, how do you get rid of them?
Jumping worms are a problem. We will have jumping worms till the end of time now, probably, unless we get another ice age coming down and taking us all out. So jumping worms are here if you have them. If you don't have them, you may in the future. The university is working on things. Many of the universities are working on products or some practical things that we can do for our jumping worms so we don't have them and they don't impact our gardens as much. But, yep, they're here. Oh, joy.
I wanted to take a moment to shout out to our friend Julie Weisenhorn.
Yes.
Who is doing a bit of recovery from
get better, Julie.
Yeah. Nothing major.
Nothing scary.
No.
Get better,
not
Julie.
At all. Not at all. And we'll have Julie on here real quick. I know, in the next week or two, in fact. So.
She's just living the life of luxury now.
I
you
love
know,
it, yeah. And her
hobby is just waiting on her hand and foot, and you know how that goes.
Anyway, feel better, Julie. I know she'll be back.
Yeah.
One more question. My amaryllis did not bloom this year. I have it sitting where it gets good sunshine. Should I continue to fertilize it throughout the summer?
If it's actively growing, yes, do continue to fertilize it throughout the summer. If you can even give it some outside sunlight, that would probably be better. It probably just didn't get quite enough light to build up that bulb for a flower this season.
Oh, let's see if we can help out some more folks here. I know we got about a minute to go. How can I get rid of my perennial garden with thistles?
What I would do is the easiest way is just to cut them at the base, and then as soon as they grow more, cut them again and keep cutting them. It's going to be a long, but that's the easiest way, so you're not disturbing the soil and you're not using chemicals and you're not disturbing your other plants. Just keep cutting them as soon as you see them grow. Cut those leaves off right away. Just keep cutting it at the base. Eventually, you will starve the root. It may take a while, but you can do it.
Minute to go. How do I get tall lilacs to grow bushier?
You'll need to probably cut them back a little bit to encourage growth from the roots. So
again,
look at renewal pruning at the extension website, extension.umn.edu.
Like you girls always say, if you and your colleagues, if you trim it at a certain time of year, you're not going to get the buds, right? The blooms.
Yep, you'll be cutting off flowers this time of year. If you don't care, that's not a problem.
All right, but we care. And we care that you'll come back, Teresa. Would you
do that?
I will.
And may I just say one more thing? May the fourth be with you. Had to do it, Denny. Had to do it.
You had to do it, of course.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you so much. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney here on 830 WCCO. The rain should be ceasing here in the next 2 or 3 hours or so, according to the forecast. Should be a nice day near 61. A beautiful Sunday tomorrow. Sunny with near 69 the high. Right now, 47 degrees on 830 WCCO.